it is my great pleasure. I'm going to introduce our speaker. Leanna lives in San Diego with her husband, who is an active Navy SEAL. They have three kids. They have boy-girl twins and another little girl. Crazy mommy, busy. She is a gypsy at heart, and she believes that we are all wildly seeking breath, life, and creativity. She believes that we are all in this together. We are not alone, and we need God in each other very much. She writes to remind us that the overwhelming days do not get to have the last say. Without further ado, Leanna Tankersley. Thank you very much. Thank you. I'll show you those later. You're wondering what I have. Well, there are very few things I love more than a room full of women. I think it's really vital that we create time and space in our lives, carve out that space, even though it can be very hard to do, to leave whatever resistances are coming at us in the morning. By the look some of you have in your eyes, you had some major resistances this morning trying to get out the door and be here. But here we are, clothed and in our right minds, more or less, for most of us. And so good for us. Good for us for being here. As she said, I have 7-year-old boy-girl twins, Luke and Lane. They're in first grade, and we have a 4-year-old who's in preschool. Her name is Elle. And I understand what it feels like when life resembles sort of this run-on sentence. And you feel like there isn't a lot of pause, there isn't a lot of punctuation, and the day and night blur, and the day-to-day blur, and the week-to-week blur, because the responsibilities and the needs sort of are ongoing, and there isn't a lot of sense of like, I know it's light outside, but I'm still doing the same things I was doing in the middle of the night when it was dark outside. And so I think that mornings like this can actually be a way that we put a little punctuation into these seasons that can end up feeling kind of like a run-on sentence. It's a pause. It's a comma, it's a semicolon, it's a period, it's a chance for us to take a quick breath, to stop, to come into a room and be seen instead of being in the anonymity of our own homes doing the hardest work we've ever done with no one watching. It's a chance for us to be heard and a chance for us to be loved in a significant way. So thank you for taking the time to be here this morning, and I really do believe that it matters. Whenever I'm coming to speak, I always pray in the car on the way, as I did for you guys this morning, that something that happens this morning would join the flow of what God is already doing in your life. Maybe there's a nudge that he's putting on your heart. Maybe there's an invitation in your life. Maybe there's a way that he's really wanting to love you right now in this season and today. And that something that happens this morning, whether it's like the knowing look of a friend across the table, like, I see you, I know what's going on in your life, sister, I love you. Whether it's something that I say, whether it's something that someone else that takes the mic that comes up here and says, or whether it's something that God whispers into your soul this morning, that something that happens would join the flow of what God's already doing, and you would be affirmed in his love for you today. I talk to a lot of women, and I have felt this way myself. In fact, after our twins were born, I have a whole journal with this phrase in it, probably over and over, like a beautiful mind. And the phrase is, I feel like I've lost myself, or I feel like I'm losing myself. I don't know if any of you have ever said that before, or if any of you have ever felt that before, or written that like a person obsessively in your journal. I feel like I've lost myself. I feel like I'm losing myself. I talk to a lot of women that say that to me. And so I started listening to that in my own soul, that phrase in my own soul, and the fact that a lot of other women around me were saying that. And I was reflecting back on my own story because I understand what that feels like. If you're here this morning and there's a piece of you that you feel like some of the most sacred and beautiful parts of you have gone dormant a little bit because of this beautiful thing we call motherhood, I understand that and I see that. And I hope that something that we talk about this morning can encourage you to kind of perhaps reawaken some of those sacred parts of you that have gone dormant. For me, when I felt that most acutely, I found myself overseas. My husband is in the Navy, as she said, and we were overseas in the Middle East when my twins were about 2.5 years old. We found out that my husband was getting orders to Bahrain, which is a small island country in the Persian Gulf, right off the coast of Saudi Arabia. I can look back now at myself in that situation with a lot of compassion, right? As sometimes we can do when we have some perspective, we can look back and give ourselves compassion. At the moment, however, I was nothing but hard on myself and frustrated that it was feeling as hard as it was feeling, that I couldn't do it with more ease, and that I couldn't put the whole experience on Instagram in a way that was filtered and lovely and that everyone thought, wow, look at her. And none of it felt that way. We get there, and there is civil infighting going on between the Sunni and the Shia, which are the two Muslim sects that are there. And so because of that, our liberties around this already very small island were restricted. If any of you have ever had two and a half year olds in your home and you've just been on a plane with them for 36 hours and you land somewhere where it's 130 degrees, that's no overstatement, and your pool is so hot you can't get into it because it's going to burn your skin off, and it's Ramadan, which means you need to be dressed from head to toe, and there are people shooting off tear gas around you. And I don't think I mentioned that I had just found out that I was newly pregnant. So you're throwing up. You can feel slightly desperate in a way that you have never felt desperate before in your life. You don't have to go to the Middle East and be involved in Sunni and Shia tear gas and infighting. In fact, if you ever meet my daughter, Elle, the little one, and she's very wild and a little bit naughty, you'll understand. Like, I understand your mommy got inhaled a lot of tear gas when she was pregnant with you. It's okay. We get it. We'll give her a pass because she ended up being born over there, and she did have a lot of tear gas in her system. So I think it explains a lot. But we were over there, and I was desperate, and you don't have to go to the Middle East to feel desperate. You don't have to go to the Middle East to feel unseen. You don't have to go to the Middle East to feel alone, disoriented, afraid, discouraged. There are some of you that are here this morning that are feeling that, or you feel great, but tomorrow it's going to hit you, right? Because some days we're riding high, we're doing great, and then all of a sudden it's like, batten down the hatches, mommy is going down, right? So I was in my car, and I was just completely overwhelmed. And all of a sudden I look out, and the landscape that I can see out of my car is totally beige. Beige sand. I saw no trees in my vista that I was looking out my car. Beige buildings. And the beige of the buildings and the beige of the sand was reflecting up to the sky so that even the sky was beige. And I like neutrals, okay? But this was like the blahs, right? And I looked out and it felt like everything I was looking at was mirroring, the external landscape was mirroring my internal landscape. If any of you ever felt ever so slightly beige, beige, and you just feel like, when is the life gonna come back? Where am I? I love the theme of MOPS this year, this fierce flourishing. Like, I could not feel a million miles farther away from a fierce flourishing, right? It's just everything's beige. And then I look out the door of my car. I'm at a stop sign on this kind of what we would call here a dirt road, but it's all sand. And I look over, and there's gutter water running, like sludgy, gross gutter water. And it's like insult to injury, right? It's like, this is already kind of blah, and now there's like ick on top of blah. And I was just like, oh. And it was like someone was doing a car wash up the street or something, and it was causing this gutter water to run by. And then a breeze picked up. And I noticed, as I was watching this gutter water kind of sadly roll by in the midst of all this beige, I notice what lands on the water is a handful of hot pink fuchsia bougainvillea petals. And somewhere up the road, there was a bougainvillea vine. And you guys know what I'm talking about. We have a lot of bougainvillea here in Southern California. And if you don't look at it, because it's everywhere, when you leave here today, look at it. Take a picture of it, put it on your phone. That color is so representative of a fierce flourishing. That hot pink fuchsia. I wore it today. To give you a very big image, visual. And somewhere up the street, in what I could not see, in what I was looking at, this breeze took a few of those tissue paper petals and it put it on that gutter water, and it came rolling by my car and it took my breath away. And I said out loud a word that I don't normally say. This is not a cuss word, so don't worry. Perfectly appropriate. I said, how brazen to have this hot pink roll by in the midst of the beige and the gutter water. And I thought, that's kind of weird that I said the word brazen. Like, well, I don't know, you know. So I get home, and I'm a word person. I'm a writer, so I love words. And I was kind of like, why did that come out of my, why that word? And I sort of felt like, you know, when something like this happens, like some people find lucky pennies on the ground, or they find like hearts in nature made out of wood. And it's like, that's God like winking at me, or God like loving me. The bougainvillea petals and that pink is kind of like that for me. And I felt like there was something God wanted me to pay attention to in this. And so I get home and I think, what is it with that word brazen? And I look it up. And the first thing it says after the word brazen in the dictionary is without shame. Without shame. And the second thing it says is unapologetic. And what was interesting to me is all I had been since I had arrived in motherhood was with shame and apologetic and feeling like I was the least prepared person for my own life. I was grossly unsuited for the role that God had given me as these three gorgeous kids, mother, and that this is what I had always wanted. Why was it so hard, right? Well, some of us have said that before. And I felt like what God was saying to me in that moment is, there's a lot of beige, I understand that, and you're struggling, but I'm giving you an invitation, and the invitation is this bright, fuchsia, fierce flourishing, and it's to be brazen, and it's to step incrementally into this life without shame, unapologetic. When Adam and Eve were in the garden after their sin, their first inclination was to hide. And God was walking in the cool of the day, and he said, where are you? Where are you? And I feel like God is saying that to many of us here this morning. He's saying, where are you? It's okay for you to incrementally come out of hiding. It's okay for you to go back in search of some of those very sacred and beautiful things that have gone dormant inside of you. I want to talk to you a little bit about that. It's okay to channel a little bit of that hot pink. So hopefully something that happens this morning will help you kind of come back to you in that way. My friend Elaine is almost 6 feet tall and has long curly hair, and she's really beautiful and lovely and someone that I admire. And I was at a workshop with her recently. We were attending this art workshop together. And the person that was that was facilitating the art workshop said, I want you to get up and walk around the room, and I've laid all these objects out around the room, and I want you to gather some of these found objects that we're going to use in your art project. And so we're walking around the room, surveying what's there and kind of picking up what resonates with us. And there on the table was this long, like this big, peacock feather, bright turquoise, bright purple. Most everything else on the table was like this big. And we walked by the peacock feather, and we get back to our table, like how you guys are, and we've all kind of got our stuff, and we're looking at our things, and Elaine says, you know, I really wanted that peacock feather, but I didn't pick it up. And we kind of look up and we're all like, well, why? You know, why didn't you pick up the peacock feather? And before she can catch herself, she says, because I don't think I deserve it. Because it's the prettiest thing on the table, and I don't think it would be too much for me to take it. I don't deserve it. And we all kind of look up at her like, hello. And she's like, I should probably go get the peacock feather, huh? Because we're like coming across the table at her, and she's like, I should probably go get it, huh? And we're like, yeah, go get the peacock feather. It's you. And it's so funny because she just was assuming that she was not that girl, right? She was not the girl that should pick up the peacock feather. Like, she should get the small thing. She should get the non-dramatic thing. Like, it's too much. So she passed by something that her soul and her heart was really drawn to because she didn't think she was that girl. What's so funny is that the rest of us at the table knew, of course Elaine is that girl. Of course Elaine is the girl that should grab the peacock feather and put it in her art project. And many of us are believing we're not that girl. We're not the girl that can flourish fiercely. We're not the girl that can kind of emerge in this really beautiful hot pink bougainvillea kind of way. We're not the peacock feather girl. Recently, I was looking at my friend Tina, and Tina has great legs. I mean, undeniably great legs. And Tina wears these really wild workout pants, like zebra and like the solar system, galaxies, and like huge giant polka dots. And I'm looking at her, and we work out together. We play tennis together once in a while, and sometimes she hosts a workout at her house. And so I see her in these pants all the time. And every time I see her in these pants, I'm kind of longing a little bit, you know, like, oh man, those are great pants. But I'm not that girl, right? Immediately, the moment I let myself like take a step toward the pants and kind of long for them, that voice inside me says, you're not that girl. You, with your biscuits, as we call them in my family, you can only wear black workout pants. Like, do you not get that? Did you not hear what your mother told you your whole life? Like, you are the girl that can only wear black workout pants. And if you put on pants that have a galaxy and a solar system on them, you're gonna scar people, okay? So you need to back away from the workout pants. You are not that girl. Anyone else ever have that little voice, that little soul bully? It's the same voice that says, shorts are not for you. They are a garment that, they're a genre that does not belong to you. Bathing suits are another genre that do not belong to you. They belong to other people. It's that voice, right, that's like, not you. You will scar people. It may or may not be the voice of our mothers. I can't say for sure. I hope my mother, no, just kidding. But it is that voice, nonetheless. It doesn't matter where it came from. And it's the voice that told us our whole lives exactly how big our biscuits were and exactly what they should or should not be in and exactly how big Tina's biscuits are or not and how great her legs look in the zebra leggings. And then I went to Marshall's one day, and I was walking through Marshall's, and there on an end cap in Marshall's were these pants. Wait for it. And I absolutely fell in love with them. And immediately, my internal hand was slapped. Keep moving, find the black pants. Find the black pants, you can't wear those are not for you. But I started circling them. Do you know how you do that in a store where it's like, and I kind of found myself just sort of circling them and like, if they jumped in my cart, and then I looked at the price and they were $14.99. And stop it right now. They're reversible. I feel like it would be irresponsible financially to not to get these pants. And I love them so much. And that voice that was telling me, I am not that girl. I'm not the girl that can pick up the beautiful peacock feather. I am not the girl that can wear these pants. Was somehow in that beautiful moment silenced by this deeper, more soulful voice inside of me that knows who I am and knows what I love. And that voice crawled up and out of me, and I grabbed the pants and I put them in my cart. And every time I wear them, I love them. I love them. And every time I wear them, someone comments on them too. But you know, that's not why we're wearing things. That's not why we're wearing things. Because you know what? Those pants remind me of me. I love the colors, I love that they're wild, and I actually feel really good in them. And you know why? Because they remind me of me. Not the shame-based me, not the fearful me, not the person who's trying to squeeze my body into something very small and look as tiny as I can possibly look in this world, but the me who's willing to take up a little space in slightly obnoxious pants. I'm not gonna tell you what my husband says about the pants. I'm not gonna tell you the looks he gives me. He's learned to be quiet. My husband's a very intense person, and sometimes when I walk out in these pants, he's like, I see you were wearing those pants. You know, yep, I sure am. Yep, aren't they awesome? I love these pants. Because we start getting into a habit of being very small, of being very uncomfortable with the amount of space that we take up in the world, and being very apologetic about who we are and how God has made us. Now, maybe you are someone who loves black workout pants, and I'm not demonizing that. Do you guys understand that? I'm saying if you love black workout pants, wear black workout pants. But if you are secretly longing for ones that have wild animals all over them, I don't know. It's okay. Investigate. But this over-apologizing thing I started to realize I was doing, and I noticed myself, some of you may relate to this, I would be in Vons and I'd be looking at grapefruits, and someone would pull their cart up next to mine. Oh, I'm sorry. I'd be at the airport with my bag and someone would come up next to me and start trying to load their stuff onto the security. Oh, I'm so sorry. I'd be at the post office and I'd have a big old box and I'd kind of turn around. I wouldn't hit anyone or anything, but it's like I'm just taking up some space. Oh, I'm so sorry. Do any of you over-apologize for yourself and the amount of space that you take up in the world? We as women are terrible about this. That it's just like our personhood and the fact that I need this much space and not this much space. It's like a big problem. And it's like, how dare I? How dare I? And you begin to realize that you are walking around town apologizing for not doing anything wrong. You know, it's okay to be breathing and to be taking up space and to have a body. Did you know that those are things that you shouldn't be sorry for? I mean, it's just actually true that I'm allowed to stand and look at grapefruits for as long as I need to without feeling like I need to apologize to someone for doing that. This is revolutionary. I mean, this is really revolutionary, okay? I need to write a book called Looking at Grapefruits in Wild Pants. I was, when my twins were four, I was at the park with them, and Lane, who is, Luke and Lane are the twins, and Lane, my daughter, had just sort of started walking away a little bit. I was very familiar with this park, as many of you are, where you're almost more familiar with the neighborhood park than you are your own living room, because you have spent so much time in that park. And Lane is walking off a little bit, and it's okay, because I can see her, and I'm with Luke. But then I see two young guys in their 20s approach her. And what immediately happens to your mom radar? It's kind of like it's going off, right? And so they're not trying to touch her, they're not grabbing her, but they're bending down and they're trying to engage her. And immediately I don't like it. I just don't like what's going on. I grab Luke, and I walk over. I don't think Elle was with us. In my memory, she was not with us. So I grab Luke and I walk over. And as I get closer, what occurs to me or what I hear is that these guys want to take her picture. They're asking her to pose, this my four-year-old little girl, so they can take her picture. And my immediate intuition is that I don't like this. There's no reason for these guys to take her picture. And in this day and age, I don't know where that picture is going to go. And I don't want this to happen. And immediately, this is all happening in a split second, that voice comes in that says, there you go again. Totally misreading a situation. Totally trying, you're going to make a scene. You're going to make a scene and everyone's going to be uncomfortable. And you totally have misread this. Like, calm down. You're always so over the top. Ugh. Like that, you know? And so I kind of recoil a little bit. Like, oh yeah, maybe it's fine. Like, maybe I'm making a way too big a deal out of this. But as I watch that interaction and see the look in these guys' eyes for one split second longer, that voice inside me that is deeper and more soulful and is not shame-based and is not so worried about pleasing everyone at the park or making a scene crawls up and out of me and says, no, no, move away from my daughter. You cannot take her picture. You cannot talk to her any longer. Please keep walking. And I realized, and that was the right thing to do. I don't know if they were doing anything lewd or not. I don't know. But what I did realize is that a lot of times in my life, I think that I am not a reliable observer of what's going on. And I squash that intuition down. And I think, I got it wrong. I'm being too much. I'm over the top. Just stop, stop, stop. I let that voice win. And that's the people-pleasing voice inside of me. That's the one that's scared of being too much or too big. And in this moment, that unapologetic, without shame voice was the one that won. It's brazen to remember that you are that girl, that you can get the peacock feather, that you can wear the workout pants, the wild workout pants. It's very brazen to find your voice again, to stop apologizing for who you are, and to speak your yes and your no when it's bubbling up inside of you. It's also really brazen to go in search of this one and only soul that God has given you. I believe God's put something inside each of you that is totally unique. In fact, I really believe that on the day of creation, God put his hands in the wet concrete of your soul, like when you're pouring a patio and your kids put their handprints in it. I believe God did that to you. And he said, it's good. It's good. And that some of us need to kind of spend some time going back after, what is that good? We're not talking about reinventing ourselves, becoming someone we're not. We're talking about returning to what's already there that God's put inside of us, that brazen part of us. How do we do that? Well, one of the things that I want to suggest is taking some time in your life to listen. And I refer to this as 20 minutes of soul time. Now, some of you are looking at me like, hey, you in the big pink shirt, you have no idea what it would be like for me to get 20 minutes of any kind of time in my life. And I get that. You know, I never thought when I became a mother that I would ever say these words, mommy loves you so much, but you cannot continue to lick my arm. You know, I say that a lot more than I ever thought I would. It's so overstimulating in my house. My husband talks very loud. My children never stop talking. They're very loud. And then things are licking me at all times. And we don't have it. We don't have a dog. You know, we're not talking about pets. But a practice that has really helped me is once in a while to push all of that away when I can. And if it's not 20 minutes, maybe it's four. And to listen to those parts of ourselves that have something to tell us. For me, it's the 6-year-old part of myself, the 20-year-old part of myself, and the 86-year-old part of myself. And just briefly, that 6-year-old part of me, I'm a middle child, and when I was 6 years old, I would stay up later than anyone in my house, and this is going to sound like kind of a weird story, because it kind of is. And on the south wall of my bedroom was a little nightlight that my parents had put in my room. And I don't even know if they make nightlights like this anymore, but the bulb would heat the nightlight up and make it hot. And I found this out, and I got this non-toxic, like, plastic nail polish for Christmas, little girl nail polish. And I realized that if I painted the nightlight, the heat from the bulb would cure the paint, the nail polish, and I could peel it off like a fruit roll off of plastic. And it was like the most satisfying thing that had ever happened to me in my life, to paint that nightlight in the middle of the night and then peel it off and then paint it. It's very strange. But that 6-year-old little girl was lost in her own world of creativity. She was not looking over her shoulder. She was not doing that for an audience. She was not performing. She was not self-conscious. And that 6-year-old girl often wants to come back and whisper in my ear, it's okay. Go get lost in your own world of creating just for a little bit. Go walk Torrey Pines, right? Go walk Torrey Pines and look out and get lost for a minute in that world. And then the 20-year-old part of me, are we doing okay on time? Great. The 20-year-old part of me, when I was 20 years old, for some of you, it may not be the 20-year-old version of yourself, but when I was 20 years old, I was in college, and I was playing volleyball, and I wasn't like an Olympian or anything, but I was decent, and I loved it, and I had played for a lot of years. And the 20-year-old version of me would yell for the ball, set me. Not as a, not someone who was like trying to take over the game, but someone who was felt self-assured and competent in the work I'd put in and the skill that I had. And I don't feel that way a lot in my life anymore, like I'm yelling for the ball. Like, I got this. The game's on the line. It's fine. You can set me. I'm ready. I often question myself. I often think I don't trust my own competence. And sometimes that 20-year-old version of me is saying, you've been a mom for 7 years now. You've probably learned a few things. You could trust that. You've been a wife for almost 14 years now. You've probably learned some things. You could trust that. You've been a writer now for a decade, and you've probably learned some things, and you could trust that instead of always assuming I'm doing it wrong. So spend some time with that kind of competent version of yourself, that 20-year-old version of yourself. And then the one I love, too, is the 86-year-old version of yourself, and she is that old woman inside you that knows things because she's lived. And she can tell you, honey, you really need to work. We really need to focus on this and hold on to this. And this over here, you need to let it go. It's okay. You can let that go. That 86-year-old version of yourself, she has a lot of wisdom to impart to you, a lot of discernment to give you. So if you find yourself like wanting to reconnect with these parts of yourselves that like, where do I even start? I feel like I'm losing myself. Spend a little time with that 6-year-old that's inside you, that 20-year-old that's competitive and self-assured and yelling for the ball, and that 86-year-old version of yourself that's like, honey, let's major on the majors and let's let the minors go away, right? And they can give us some wisdom as we're looking for ourselves. So we set our phone timer for about 20 minutes. 4 minutes while we're going to the bathroom, whatever we can, however long we can get someone to stop licking us, and we listen. We listen. We don't study, we don't read, we don't make lists, we listen. We listen to what our souls want to tell us, and we ask God, is there anything you want to say to me about this? Is there anything you want to say to me through that 6-year-old, that 20-year-old, that 86-year-old version of me? And then inevitably, and we just have to kind of make peace with this, the soul bullies are going to show up, right? Because we're listening to that soul voice inside of us. And so the bullies are going to be like, I need my air time too. And they're going to show up and they're going to start saying, you know, you've tried this before. You've tried journaling. You've tried listening. You've tried, trying to resurrect some of these parts of yourself. And who do you think you are? And how dare you? And it's not going to work for you because you're not that girl. And what I've realized in my life is that the soul bullies are going to always show up, and their tactics are fear-mongering and shame, and they're always wrong. They're always wrong. They're just condemning. It's like the junkyard, the schoolyard bully, right? Whose only tactic is to like pick you up and turn you upside down and shake your lunch money out of you. That's their only play. And if you can kind of cut them off at the pass and say, I know you're going to come along for this ride, bully. I know you're going to be here. I know you're going to start giving put toxic thoughts in my head. But today, even though you're here, I just want you to know you're not in charge. You're not going to be the one in charge today. So sorry. You can just sit over here. I'll give you a glass of ice water. And I'd like you to just stay out of this for now. This is between me and my soul and God. We can talk back to the soul bullies. I love the line in Oh, the Places You'll Go by Dr. Seuss. Have you guys read that book to your kids before? I read that book to my kids and I like sob and like, you're going to leave and you're going to go and it's going to be okay, but you'll have to come back and visit mommy. And they're just like, could you keep going with that, please? There's a fabulous line in Oh, the Places You'll Go, and it says, sometimes you'll play lonely games too, games you can't win because you'll play against you. And that's what the soul bullies want to do. They want to keep you in the ring with yourself. So just in closing, I just want to let you know that I believe on the day of creation that God put his hands, I'm going to say it again, in the wet concrete of your soul and said it is good, and that the things that he put there inside of you are good. And some of us along the way received the message that the most essential thing about us is that we're flawed. And I don't believe that. I think the most essential thing about us is that we're beloved. We may be broken, but we're also beloved. We may be a mess, but God put his image inside of us. There's a little bit of magic in there too. We may be wounded. All of us in this room are. But there's wonder inside of us too. And I want to invite you to go in search of that inside yourself. And I want you to do it not just for yourself, but because there's a generation watching all of us. There's two sets, four female eyes in my household that are looking at me, watching me and how I'm doing this. And I want to show them what it looks like to take up my God-given space in the world and to do that unapologetically. Let's pray. Thank you, God, that you desire us to live without shame. You desire us to flourish fiercely, and you will help take us by the hand and walk us into brazen living if we will follow you. Thank you, God, for your grace and your love that covers us. And I pray that each woman in here would have one thing they can take away that would help them to live with a little bit less shame, a little bit less apologetically. In your name we pray, amen.
Thank you. Wait, don't leave yet. We didn't even.
You guys, don't forget those.
That would have been so tragic.
Thank you for your time and your words and for teaching us how all to flourish. I think that was beautiful, tied so great with our theme.
Thank you.